Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters, love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
Bradford Show. That's my open. That's what they used to call me, Swivel Hit Bradford. That's my open. I'm waiting for you to justify your stupid opinion. Bradford Show. That's delicious.
All right, we're really excited to have Ryan Brazier today on the Bradford Show. Boom Sauce. Are you a beer drinker?
A little bit, yeah.
All right,
more of a like whiskey.
Okay.
Type guy.
So you guys. One of our friends of the podcast is Lord Hobo Brewing Company, and they have a great IPA called Boom Sauce. And I just said, like, listen, Boom Sauce is, this is very well timed with the national anthem going on in the background. That's okay. We'll power through. But Boom, I mean, how great is, like, yelling Boom Sauce, right? If I had a home run call, that would be my home run call. Yell it. Do it with Boom Sauce.
Boom Sauce?
Yeah. Like, give me a home run call with Boom Sauce.
way back,
Boom Sauce.
Boom Sauce.
Oh, sorry, you don't seem to be embracing the Boom Sauce like I embrace.
I'm not a big beer drinker. Like, if I do drink beer, it's like.
It would be Boom Sauce. I'm not even talking about the beer. I'm just talking about it's fun to say Boom Sauce.
Boom
anyway.
Sauce. Is that like their. Yeah. Their slogan or
no, that's their main beer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
Isn't it a great name for a beer?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Boom Sauce.
Yeah. So anyway, this is a bad way to start your first ever podcast as you turn. I appreciate you coming out. I really do. And we had talked before, Ryan, about sort of your path, and we're gonna get to that. But I had this in my head, and I was thinking when I was driving here, and I did not want to forget it, so that's why I'm going to lead off with it. When you're on the mound, you ever watch, are you a movie guy?
I love movies.
Okay.
Yeah.
For the Love of the Game?
Love of the Game, right.
All right.
Right.
Clear Mechanism?
Yeah. All
right.
Kevin Costner, yeah,
yes.
I love that movie.
So you do a thing before you pitch where you, first of all, do you ever see Cinderella Man?
Yeah, with Russell Crowe.
Yes.
Right.
You remember? Okay, so this is actually a better example. Max Baer, the guy who plays Max Baer, when he's in the big fight with Russell Crowe, and all of a sudden now he's toying around with him, now he's going to get serious, and he gets up and tilts his head a little to the left, like, and it's almost like the Kevin Costner Clear Mechanism. To me, do you know you do this?
I've done it since I was little.
Really?
Yeah, it's something people ask me all the time, but it's just, like, natural.
I thought I was the first to ask, no?
Oh, no. No, everybody's asked me, and it's just, I don't know. I've done it since I was a kid.
Really?
And it's just natural, yeah.
But at least I'm not seeing things. So,
No.
So basically, when you, it's almost like the Clear Mechanism moment, right? I mean.
It's hard to say it's my mechanism thing because I always do it. I mean, even walking around or anything. Yeah. Anything I do, I have it.
You tilt your head?
Yeah, all the time.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I haven't really seen you walk around. I've seen you on the mound. So it's not just like in case people don't know what we're talking about, you set and you tilt your head. Like you just sort of press your left ear?
Left ear, yeah.
Left ear against your shoulder, right?
I don't know if it might be more if when I'm on the mound, but in general, it's all the time. Yeah,
I like it.
It's pretty funny that you asked me that, though. I mean, I guess I could say that.
Yeah, no, but it's kind of like watching you pitch. I didn't know you did it walking around, but watching you pitch, I'm sort of like, that is your clear mechanism.
Right.
I mean, if you're going to have one, that's a good one.
Right. No, I thought you were going to ask me because before every pitch, I kind of look up in the stands.
Yeah.
And I've had people ask me that.
Okay.
As far as, you know, is that like my, not necessarily clear my mechanism, but is that like my, like in between pitches? And I don't really notice it, but I guess if I had one, it would be, I kind of look up in the stands, and nothing in particular, between every pitch and, like, take a deep breath before I get back on the road.
So is that conscious? Like, is that, are you, like, you don't know that you're tilting your head, but do you know?
No, I don't know that, but I try to make it a point between every pitch to like breathe it out or get back in myself or whatever the case
like
is.
Ricky Bobby lower the heart rate.
Yeah.
Right.
So. But yeah, as far as the head thing, it's just since I was a kid, everything I do. I mean, even sitting down or whatever.
Oh really?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I didn't mean to surface I don't know, something you've done since a kid.
No,
I thought it was
it ain't a big deal.
So anyway, the first time I saw you pitch, it was at Hammond Stadium. And I was actually doing, I fill in the radio broadcast, and we do the entire game. And you know how it works in spring training, where in those games, most of the time, the reporters come down in the sixth inning because everyone's hitting the golf course. So we're going through it, and we're having a hard enough time keeping up with like who's on the other team. And we have usually, by then, this was sort of mid-March, by then we sort of have an idea of who the minor leaguers are and who's going to come in the sixth, seventh, and eighth inning. And then all of a sudden you show up. And we're scrambling. I don't even know if you had like a name on the back of your jersey.
No, I don't think so.
So talking to Kelly. He said that he talked to you, I think, that day. You were backing up. Backing up means you're like the fail-safe case.
Just-in-case pitcher. Yeah,
right.
We call him Jicks. Just-in-case,
really?
Yeah.
That's pretty good. I hadn't heard that. So, but you show up, and you told him, he said, listen, I haven't even faced hitters. Like,
yeah, when I threw for the, this offseason, I threw a lot of bullpens on turf. I mean, I hardly getting off of dirt. Went to Arizona to throw for some teams. Threw off the dirt there. And then I faced three guys in the box that only swung a few times at a deal for the Rangers, like a little tryout thing. But other than that, I hadn't faced any hitters before I got...
In a game?
In a game, yeah.
That's insane.
Well, so I backed up two games, and then I went and talked to some of the coordinators, the minor league guys, about I can't just keep going to back up and not pitch.
Yeah.
And so they put me in a... like a little inter-squad game on the minor league side. And I faced three or four hitters through like 10 pitches. And then the next day I was backing up again and I pitched in my first game.
So did I obviously – to go back to your history, you've obviously pitched in the major leagues before. You either were the Angels and you were the A's and you in Japan, and you had pitched in Japan last year. But was it bizarre? Like this, we'll get to the story in a second of how you get to this point. But was it bizarre that day? It was a Hammond. Was it Hammond Stadium the first time
I pitched? I backed up at the Twins place the first time without seeing any hitters or anything, and the next day, I think, was at Hammond's, and that's when I told him, like, hey, is there any way I can get a game? Like, I know you guys want me to go back up, but is there any way I can get some hitters? Because I don't want to go up there and, pitch bad or whatever.
Right.
And so they agreed, and I threw some hitters, and then I think my first outing was 2 days after that at Hammond's.
Were you worried that, so when you were showing up, what did you call it again? I like that.
Just in case.
Yeah.
They call them Jicks.
Jicks.
Like J-I-C, in case pitchers. Yeah.
So when you were a Jicks pitcher, and you show up and you're like, hey, I haven't faced a hitter. Were you a little like, I kind of hope I don't get in? Or, you want to pitch, but
man,
still.
It was so crazy with the phone call. And they say, can you come tomorrow?
Yeah.
And then I got there and I couldn't even get on the field because of the some stuff with my signing. Like, they couldn't turn it over that quick or something. And so I sat there for a couple of days, and I think I was more anxious. Like, I wanted to get in the game.
Mm. So between the time that the Red Sox call you, fly you to Fort Myers, I assume they paid for your flight, fly to Fort Myers, between that time you get that call and when you were in a uniform as an option, as a Jicks guy, how many days was it?
Six or seven, I think.
Was that the first time you'd put on a uniform?
Yeah. When I went up, I threw two bullpens before I went. They wanted me to get off the mound a little bit before I went and backed up. So I threw two bullpens, back-to-back days, and then day off, and then Jake.
Okay. Now, this is a terrible job of going through the timeline, but I don't care. that moment, because like I said, I'm broadcasting the game, and I'm just sitting there thinking, I don't know. We see it once in a while, guys like that, like who gets dropped in, but usually they're gone. Like, I'll give you an example. This isn't a terrible example, but Carlos Quinton, remember him?
Yeah, I remember Carlos Quinton.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So Carlos Quinton was a guy they were going to take a flyer on, no guarantees, minor league contract. He comes in, you know, by the time the third week of spring training is gone. But, you know, we watched him. So to think where you are now, and to think back, to refresh your memory about that moment, you hope for the best, but is it insane to think about?
Oh, I mean, I tell people every day, like friends and family that text me or call me, and, you know, if you asked me the day before the Red Sox called, if I'd be sitting here
doing this podcast
to you, and, you know, we're 10 and a half games up in first place and, you know, doing what we're doing.
And by the way, you're pitching.
I would have told you I didn't see it coming, for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, even you hope for the best, but still.
Yeah, and obviously I still wanted to play, and yeah. I thought that I could still pitch, you know, and contribute to a team in the big leagues, but to be here doing it like right now with this team has been, it's been a crazy ass year.
See, that's what we should put on the bumper stickers. It's been a crazy ass year.
I mean, it has. It has flown by. Yeah. And I mean, it's been the funnest year that I've ever had.
Yeah, well, how can you not have fun?
Yeah, obviously walking into this clubhouse every day knowing, you know, what we're doing, it's hard to not come in smiling or, you know, upbeat or in a good mood or whatever.
So now we're going to do the timeline properly. I don't know, where do you want to start? Like, we had talked about the actual timeline of signing the Red Sox. You had worked out as a high schooler?
I came here in 2007. I went to college for 1 year, and I signed actually as a catcher, and then I started pitching in the spring. And I came to Fenway for a pre-draft workout, and I think there was four or five guys here. And, that was 2007. And then I ended up getting drafted by the Angels in the draft.
Did you think did you have a good workout here?
I thought so, yeah. I mean, back then it was – pretty much just let it eat. I was just trying to throw as hard as I could to get drafted. I mean, that, you know, everyone that you talk to is like, show them how hard you throw. And so I got up on the mound and was just, you know, trying to throw 200 miles an hour. So
was that in the bullpen, or
it was out in the bullpen.
Okay. All right. Did you have any other workouts like that?
I went to one for the Astros, and I went to one.
Was that the closest to your town?
I live like an hour and a half from Arlington. Yeah, so, I did some stuff at the ballpark, you know, before that. Like, they weren't open tryouts or anything. It was like a showcase type stuff, you know, like high school. Mm-hmm. And then I threw for the Pirates, or the only three or four.
So you get drafted, and when you make it to the I'm sorry, I'm going to skip over your minor league. I apologize.
Yeah, that's fine.
You weren't paid a lot then, anyway. So you get drafted, you make it to the major leagues with the Angels. When you do that, do you feel like, okay, you know what, here it is, this is how it's going to work, I'm going to make the major leagues and I'll see you in 12 years?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about that. I mean, when I got called up, I knew it was going to be, you know, kind of a short deal because it was injuries and stuff, and, you know, most guys don't stay up the first time they get called up. So, you know, I was up and down a little bit. And then in September, I threw well, you know, and I was excited for spring training the next year, you know, trying to make the team. And, I got hurt and had Tommy John right after spring training in 14. So to say that I didn't think about, you know, being in the big leagues for 15 years or whatever, of course you do.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody wants to.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was I was not even close to the same type of pitcher as I am now.
So you go to the A's and spend the entire time in the A's in the minor leagues, right?
Yeah. So I missed all of 14 and 15 with the surgery.
Yeah.
And then I actually signed with the A's in July of 15. And they basically put me through like a spring training, and I ended up throwing like four or five innings at the end of that year, and went into spring training and threw well. I got invited to big league camp with the A's, and I threw well, and then I had the best year of my career up until this year, in 16 in Nashville, and I was there all year. Mm-hmm.
And the biggest thing to come out of the A's besides pitching well was everyone said you looked like Stephen Voigt. that true?
Oh my God, that's so funny.
You know, I cheated on that one because I saw you walk out of the dugout one time, and some guy comes up and said, "You know who you look like?" And some, I don't know who. Remember what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And you're like, "No, but people say I look like Stephen Vogt," and I'm like, "Oh my God."
Yeah. Everyone says I look like Stephen Vogt. It's so funny because when I was with the A's, like, it was everyone in there was like, they called us brothers and stuff. It was pretty funny.
It's true. I mean, it's kind of true though, right?
No, I mean, even the guys in here.
Really?
Everyone tells me I look like Stephen Vogt.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. It's not a bad thing.
And it's funny because now, like, people are like, "You know who you look like?" And I'm like, "Yeah, Stephen Vogt." And they're like, "That's exactly what I was going to say." And so, it doesn't surprise me.
Well, so at some point you had to move on from that. You did not want to be compared to a teammate any longer. So you took your talents to the Far East. Tell me why you did that. And I would imagine it was because of money, because of most of the times that's
it's
about.
Yeah, it was. And I came off a good year in AAA with the A's, and I actually signed back with them before I signed to go to Japan. And the money, what they were offering looked and sounded awesome. Mm-hmm. I went over there expecting to be there for a few years and try to make some good money and see what happened, while I was there, if I was going to stay longer or what. And, unfortunately, but fortunately, it didn't work out. And now I'm.
This is a cliche question, but was it what you thought it would be over there?
No, it wasn't. The game was a little different. The way they played over there and kind of, the team I was on, it was a little different. How teams are ran. So I had a lot of fun. I did, but I wasn't going back.
No.
Either way.
You were actually in the minors there, right?
Part of the year, yeah. It was like half and half.
So when you're in the minors there, and like you said, it's half and half, were you like, "Oh my, this is not going how I thought it would"? I mean, was there like questions about your whole baseball mortality?
No. I knew I still wanted to play. I knew I could still play. The team I was on, they had the guys that they won the league with the year before, and I understood that going over there, and I threw well or was throwing well, and unfortunately they had some guys coming back and they thought that they had better options. Mm-hmm. And so I went down and I did my job.
Did you become a better pitcher there? I mean, obviously you've evolved as a pitcher, but was there anything you could take out and say, "Hey, you know what, I was able to figure out this"? I know that with the balls are slightly different and stuff.
The mounds were terrible. Really? But as far as pitching, though, I started working. That's when I started throwing my changeup, my split change or whatever. And I threw it a lot at the end of the year when I was down in the minor leagues just to try to get a new pitch. Mm-hmm. It was pretty easy pitching. Mm-hmm. In the minor leagues there. So I had, I was fortunate enough to be able to work on some stuff. But as far as, learning how different stuff or how to pitch different, I didn't really.
Mm-hmm. It's just like, I want to move on.
Yeah. And I was, as soon as the year was over, I was so ready to get home. And my family came for like a month. Uh-huh. And it was tough for them not being there. And even, even the little as I've seen them this year, it's not a 14-hour time difference. And so I can call whenever but I'm glad to be back.
Yeah, it's a big hit. If you don't have the right plan, if you don't have the right calling plan, it's like going to Canada, right?
Oh, God.
But did you get hit?
So they have like these little Wi-Fi devices over there, yeah. And I just got one of those and used FaceTime and text message and stuff.
Okay, all right.
So it was easy that way. I just meant as far as like calling, because noon over there
is
like 2 a.m. here.
Yeah.
And so it was tough to get to talk to them. And so.
We went to Japan in 2008 with this team. Mm-hmm. What a disaster that was. I mean, it was because it took half a year to get, the back on track.
Oh, yeah, I mean it was crazy when I got home. I'd stay up till 3 or 4 a.m.
Yeah,
the first like week I was home, just because I couldn't sleep. I was so used to being on the Japan time.
What? So you land in Texas?
Yeah,
Texas.
Dallas. Yep.
Okay, so you land in Dallas. When was that? What? No, November or October?
October 27th. I was gone 9 months to the day.
Okay.
So I left January 27th and came back October 27th.
Okay. So you land in Dallas on October, at the end of October, and do you say, "Okay, this is my plan now. I'm going to work out here, and I'm going to get ready for spring training"? And did you have a blueprint how you wanted things to do?
Yeah, of course I did. I mean, I, going to take a couple weeks off and then get back at it. You know, I didn't think I'd have as much try. I didn't think I was going to have go throw for teams. I mean, I thought it would be a little bit easier to get a job when I got back, but, you know, it didn't work out like that. And so as the offseason, you know, continued and got through November and December, I started getting kind of nervous about not playing, you know, and even, you know, talking to my wife about what I'm going to do if it doesn't work out. And
what were you going to do?
No idea.
Really?
Nope.
Yeah.
I didn't want to go play indie ball. You know, it's hard enough, you know, two kids and my wife, you know, that kind of money is not nearly enough to have a family. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my wife works and stuff, but I didn't really want to go that way. And I would have went, you know, for a month or two to try to sign somewhere, but I didn't want to go spend a whole year doing the indie ball thing. And then, talked about going to play in Mexico maybe in the summer league there, but I was still holding on.
It's good, you know, obviously it's wise to hold out hope and keep going, but it sounds like too that, like, when you say I talked to my wife about this might not happen, you know, life is long. And it wasn't anything. There wasn't like I want to go back to school. I want to be an architect or.
No, not really. I mean, I probably subconsciously thought that if I started thinking about not playing, that it would somehow maybe not make me get a job or something. Mm-hmm. And so I tried to stay as I don't really want to say positive about it, but I tried to think about playing as much as I could. I mean, I didn't want to be done.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about your best bachelor party ever. And so you know why I'm asking because the most important bachelor party that you have ever attended.
Yeah, well, it's funny that people keep asking me that, but the guy that was getting married for his bachelor party, they actually, him and another friend of mine came to Arizona when I was rehabbing my elbow, and he loved it. I mean, it was the middle of summer and hot, and you know, we played golf two rounds a day while they were there, and he had a fun. And so once he said when he proposed to his now it's his wife, they got married in April, we started talking about bachelor party, and everybody's like Vegas and, you know, Mexico to go fishing or whatever.
By the way, this is the loudest national anthem rehearsal I've ever heard in my life. This is nuts. This is like, so I don't care, and we're going to power through this, but still. It's one thing to do this during a national anthem rehearsal, but this is the loudest one I've ever. This is like they're basically they're pissing on their territory. They're like saying we're going to screw you as much as possible. We're going to have a woman and a man, not just
a group. It's a big group of them.
Yeah, it's like, oh god, this whatever. Anyway, so you chose Arizona.
He was like, I don't want to go to Vegas because it's, you know, everyone goes to Vegas and. I was like, let's go to Scottsdale. I mean, and it was perfect weather, and we played a couple rounds of golf a day. They have a couple casinos there, and, you know, so when we decided that we were going to Arizona, and I still hadn't signed yet, I started talking to my agent, and we emailed all the teams, and, you know, like 8 or 10 showed up to watch me throw. And we, you know, I planned it. Because he was getting married in April, and we wanted to do the bachelor party before I left. And we didn't know when I was going to leave or sign or whatever, so we decided to do it in early January. And I made it for like 4 or 5 days after the bachelor party to throw.
I heard it was rained out, too, the first.
Yeah, the first day got
rained. Which never happens in Arizona.
And it was crazy because I had a catcher lined up, you know, and it rained out. And so I email, you know, I'm panicking because I'm like, well, shit, this just ain't going to happen. You know, there is somebody higher than me that just does not want me to play baseball anymore. And so reschedule it for the next day. And a couple teams were like, yeah, we can't make it tomorrow, blah, blah, blah.
Sucks.
Yeah. And so I get there, and the kid that's supposed to catch me had to report that day. So I didn't have a catcher. And so I'm panicking. You know, there's a couple scouts starting to show up, and I still haven't had a catcher. And, you know, fortunately, and I appreciate it more than almost anything that could have happened. I mean, I owe a lot to Keith Wilson, the guy that Joy works out with in Arizona. He was catching some of his players, and I asked him, you know, can I pay you for, like, a whatever it costs these guys to work out in here, you know, I'll pay whatever it takes. I need a catcher.
Yeah.
And he was like, man, don't worry about it.
How much a catcher costs.
Yeah. And I would have, I mean, honestly, I would have emptied my bank account. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I would have done whatever it took, but, you know, he was awesome. He was like, man, don't worry about it. You know, I want you to have success. And I never met the guy.
Yeah.
I never met him before that.
Yeah, yeah.
And he couldn't have been nicer in helping me out.
How many guys? You said about eight scouts
were there. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Maybe eight, around eight. Yeah, seven, eight, nine.
So we had talked. I talked to the Red Sox people and about, you know, how they viewed it, and they liked you. They liked your personality. They liked your reports you had with the Angels and everything else. They liked your breaking ball, and you threw pretty well at the thing. Was there, obviously the velocity was a thing when you started back in spring training? Like, yeah, oh shit!
Well, the day I threw, I felt pretty good, and it was my first time off of a good dirt mound.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I think I was like 90, 92, mm-hmm. which, you know, for a bullpen, it's so hard for guys to throw bullpens and really bear down. I mean, you know, obviously, in my situation, I had to get a little bit going just because, I mean, I was pitching for a job, but it's hard to get your velocity up and your intensity in a bullpen. And so they told me I was 90, 92, and I was kind of bummed out. And one of the scouts, I asked, I said, you know, what was my velo? And he told me, I was like, man. And he was like, do you think you're going to be throwing harder? I was like, well, shit, yeah. Like, at least I wanted to be. I mean, I liked him throwing a four or five. He was like, man, we know. Like, he was like, everybody here, they know you throw hard. And it's not, we weren't here for the velo. So.
But you only, so a month goes by, right? And you don't hear anything.
Over a month. Yeah, that was like, I think January, like 8th or 9th or 10th or something, 12th. And I didn't get a call from anyone until the Sox called on like the 26th or 7th of February.
So that was, once again, that creeps into, well, you go a month and a half, it has to creep into like the same sort of conversations you had when you initially had with your wife in December. Like, what's going on? Because if you don't, as you said, the Red Sox are the only ones to get back to you.
Right.
And I think I asked this before, like, if the Red Sox don't get back to you, you know, what do you do?
No idea.
That's insane.
I mean, I was literally scrambling for stuff. And, you know, my agent kept telling me, he's like, hey, just be patient. You know, a lot of teams will have guys come into spring training, get hurt, you know, so don't stop throwing and don't stop working out, which I never did.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't going to. But, I mean, I was going to hold on and wait as long as I could until hopefully somebody called.
When did you – now, we've already gone through the Red Sox, when you show up at the Red Sox and all of that. When did you realize or really think, like, hey, you know, like, they're thinking of me – they are going to give me a legitimate chance? Because one of the things, you know, I was talking to Gus Quattlebaum about this is a good story to tell – everybody say, you don't have to be on the 40-man roster. You don't have to be drafted here or there. If you're good, we're going to give you a shot. When for you did you really start thinking, I'm going to get a shot here?
You know, even in spring, you know, when they told me I was coming to spring training, it was, you know, we need guys to throw innings. You're going to be backing up a lot in the big league games, but we don't have a spot for you. You know, you're going to have to pitch to get on a team. And so from day one, you know, I'm full bore going, throwing as hard as I can, you know, trying to make a team. And I was throwing well in spring training and still not sure if I was going to be on a team anywhere or get a job, you know, get to go to, you know, I would have been okay going to Double A.
Right.
I mean, I just wanted to play. And so luckily I, you know, made the team in Pawtucket and, you know, threw well and, you know, just hoping. You know,
so when you get the call, when you're at Pawtucket, you're doing really well, you're closing games and everything else, but when they tell you, all right, you're going up, you're not on the 40-man roster, was that a surprise at all to you?
I don't want to say yes.
Yeah.
I mean, but because I was throwing well.
But you know how business works.
I completely understand that, you know, especially, you know, teams like this that, you know, when they just need a guy for a few days or whatever. And so yeah, I was surprised a little bit. I'd be lying to you if I didn't tell you that I thought I should have been here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I thought I was pitching, obviously pitching better than I ever have in my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's always a surprise whenever your manager calls, you know, and says, hey, you know, you're meeting the team in Kansas City tomorrow for a day game.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm rushed. I pack a bag and me and Cuevas drove to Boston at 2 a.m. to get to the airport.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wait, so how's that? You drove to 2 a.m. for what?
So they called, Bolsey called me at like midnight. yeah. and said, hey, you and Cuevas are going tomorrow to a day game in Kansas City. It was a noon game.
Yeah.
And so I go to the field. By the time I get to the field and get my stuff packed, it's 1.
Yeah.
And our flight's at 7. So I'm not going to go home and first off, I'm not going to be able to sleep because I'm excited.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go to my apartment and sleep for 2 hours and then get up and drive an hour and a half to – we left from Boston.
Yeah.
And so we were just – I asked him if he wanted to go.
So you were one of these guys in the airport who was like – who's hanging out at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, yeah. Well, they actually opened the gates at 3.
Okay.
So we checked in and we went inside. I laid down in front of the gate until, like, on the floor until they got us boarded.
So and someone passed by and said, you are going to be the 8th inning setup guy by the time August rolls around.
No, would not have seen that coming.
What were you, when you first, so you come out, you pitch for the Red Sox, you've been around, you pitched in the May League. Were you nervous? Were you nervous at all? I mean, this is a big moment for you.
Obviously, I mean, it's hard not to be nervous pitching here
yeah.
on a team that's doing this in the but best stadium in the country.
But there's nerves, so there's nerves, and there's like the, like, I remember Sale saying this, he's, because now all of a sudden he was throwing harder. Why are you throwing harder? Because how can you not throw harder? You're here. So
right.
there's the two sides of this.
You know, I wasn't really nervous until, like, I started running in, and, like, warming up, I was good, you know, running in, and I got about halfway to the infield and kind of, you know, looked up, and this place is just slammed.
Yeah.
You know, we're winning, I think it was like 5-0 or whatever, and I got a little, not nervous really, but like more like butterflies, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, after that, I was good.
And so, and as you go along, you pitch really well. As you go along, you're like, you know, I feel good. I feel I'm putting words in your mouth, but I feel better than I ever have, and I feel confident, and I belong here. And there you go.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to say I felt better than I ever have.
Yeah.
As far as my stuff goes, it's I mean, it's by far better than it ever has been as far as stuff goes. You know, the way my body feels and stuff like that, I feel the same. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the way that I've pitched this year has definitely been different than in the past, and especially since I've been up here.
Yeah.
You know, Pawtucket, I was in a transition of, you know, trying to, I don't want to say attack hitters in different ways, but learning how to pitch more effectively with what I have.
Mm.
You know, I used to get really fastball happy, just fastball, and it hurt me. And I never, I don't know if it was thick-headed or, you know, I have a good fastball and I'm just going to keep throwing it. But a lot of the stuff that they do here, you know, at the beginning of the year, if you would have thought that I was going to be like a analytical, like talking to Banny about, you know, throwing what pitches and stuff.
Right, you weren't that guy.
No, I wasn't. Yeah. And I always thought, like, God, that's not baseball, you know. And towards the All-Star break and Pawtucket, I started trying to throw more sliders, work on, you know, hitters counts throwing off-speed pitches or whatever it is. And then I get here and Sandy does a freaking awesome job of calling games and mixing stuff up. And I've never thrown more than – I've thrown 3 off-speed in a row in my life maybe one time. And this year and since I've been here in the last month, I've done it 3 or 4 times. I even threw 4 in a row the other night.
Which is that? Is that more of Sandy calling – or is it more of, like you said, the Bannister, hey, if you do this, this will work?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, you know, Sandy, I feel like, does a really, really, really good job. And all of our catchers, you know, I see them, but they have books on every team or whatever. So I every time I go in the game, I'm super confident that whatever they're calling is what they want. And, you know, another thing is, you know, I used to think that throwing multiple off-speed pitches in a row would hurt me because, if it's not a strike, you're like, oh, well, now I'm behind. But since I've been here, you know, throwing 2 or 3 in a row and you get swings on them, even in hit, you know, behind in the count, ahead in the count. And I think it's really helped out.
That's because everyone's trying to jack out home runs all the time, right? I talked to Porcello about that. He said, you know,
it's 100% the way guys are swinging now, and with the pitch mixes and you know, a lot of the guys, you know, everyone throws hard now. I feel like, but I think a big part of my success this year, as a whole, has been trying to throw more off-speed pitches.
I apologize because I've taken up way too much of your time. So, but I do want to ask. I'm going to ask you. This will be my last question for you, but then I always offer the opportunity if you want to ask questions. I feel like I can maybe answer questions about, I don't know, media or whatever. So whatever, what it's like to take a duck boat tour. I don't know, but this, you can think about that. So the way that things are going now, it could be very well. We could find you in a very important situation on the biggest stage at the biggest time, so forth and so on. I mean, it could be a playoff game in the eighth inning, whatever. What is to this point, maybe this is in Little League, maybe this is in high school, what has been that moment for you where you're like, everyone is relying on me at this is the biggest pitch of my life? With a lot of pressure on. Were you in a state like tournament game? Or
I mean, I was, but we got run rolled in the state semifinals of high school. I mean, it's probably the other night in Baltimore with the bases loaded there in the day game. It's the first time I've ever thrown 3 days in a row in my career.
Really?
Yeah.
And, ever?
Ever. And so coming in with the bases loaded to their hottest hitter, you know, that it was
with the game on the line.
With the game on the line, yeah. And we were up, I think, one or two runs at the time. And, you know, I usually don't show a lot of, emotion, but I was pretty excited. He battled his ass off. It was like a 10-pitch at bat.
Yeah.
And so that, I guess it'd be that. I mean, it had to be that.
Well, you know, we don't know how this is going to unfold, but that's the way things are trending. You would like to think that when you get on a mound, let's say in New York at Yankee Stadium in a playoff game with that situation, that everything you're going to be able to tilt your head and clear the mechanism.
I mean, it's crazy. I'm getting like goosebumps thinking, even thinking about it. I mean, I hope that's not, I hope you ask me this question in 2 months and I could give you three or four better than that.
Right. But maybe it's an evolution. Maybe it's just like you have the moments like you did in Baltimore, and then you're going to have another moment. Because the way that things are going right now, you're pitching higher and higher leverage situations. So maybe you're working your way up to that. You can never simulate that, what I'm talking about. But.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, and that's why I say I hope to have three or four, five, six, unlimited amount of those moments for the rest of this year.
Hmm. All right, what do you got? What do you got? Anything? Nothing. See, this is always a tough question. Was it so? Has this? So I'll put the question in your mouth. I guess is that has this been the scene? So you're in Kansas City and you're in a Kansas City clubhouse, and there's some people who travel, whatever. You get the Fenway though, and there's a lot of people covering the team and everything else like that. And it's sort of chaotic and it's cramped. And is it what you thought it would be like? And I guess here's another one. Has anyone ever recognized you yet?
A little bit around the park. Yeah. Not really anything outside of
that's
the
good
area. But, I mean, I knew it was going to be crazy with the media just because of how good we're doing. Mm-hmm. And, having Mookie and JD doing what they're doing, there's going to be a lot of buzz and TV and stuff. But it really hasn't been as crazy. I mean, it hadn't really been crazy. It's been pretty easy.
What's your hobbies?
I like to golf.
You like to watch movies.
I love movies, yeah. I go to a lot of movies in the off season.
Alright. Favorite movie?
Of all time?
Yeah.
That is a tough question.
Sports movie.
Favorite sports movie? Any Given Sunday. I love Any Given Sunday.
Oliver Stone.
Let's see. The movie 61.
Yeah,
when I was a kid, I loved that movie.
Yeah.
There's so many, like all the Rockies. A lot of people don't like the fifth one, the one with Tommy Gunn. Probably one of my favorite ones.
Really?
Yeah, it has the best one-liners of any Rocky movie.
Did you see the 30 for 30 on Tommy Morrison?
I think so.
About, his...
I knew
the guy who played Tommy Gunn.
Yeah, my dad told me, growing up, I knew his story about him and stuff. But I don't know if I saw the 30 for 30.
Yeah. Are you a big documentary?
Not really. Documentary. No, I don't. I like the 30 for 30s just because it's all sports stuff, for the most part. But it's outside of that, I don't watch a whole lot of them.
Okay.
Favorite comedy would probably have to be Step Brothers.
Yeah.
Love
also,
Stickler.
Rob Riggle. You know Rob Riggle,
yeah,
the
yeah,
actor?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So we were doing, he came up to the Nesson stage. I was walking off, and I said, I had like one question for him. I said, what's your favorite movie? He's in a ton of movies.
Right.
I said, Step Brothers. I mean, well, this isn't like Catalina Winemixer. Right, I mean, that's right. Not a big role, so. I mean.
No, that movie is so funny. Every time it's on TV, I watch it.
Yeah.
Braveheart, top of the list. Gladiator, 300. I mean, I know those are all like the same movie.
No, but, no, it's good. It's good.
Bad Boys 2. It is one of my favorite movies.
You're going in the wrong direction.
I'm trying to think of my favorite movies.
It's fine. It's your favorite movie, but I'm telling you, it's funny because we did a thing with Ortiz. This is a while ago. Sean Casey was, he carried around a camera and like, all right, top five movies. So Sean Casey ran up to Dave Ortiz, top five movies, and he said, he's going down the list, and you know, I can question your movie taste, but he was like, number one, Pink Panther 2.
It's no, I love watching movies, and me and my wife, you know, for a long time, we'd go on like Black Friday. Mm-hmm. To like Walmart and get like the $3 like new release movies.
Yeah.
And we had so many movies, and you know, now with technology and stuff, you don't really have to do that. But like my son and my daughter both, you know, they love watching movies and stuff.
What's the actor or actress you would want to meet? Because if you have some cachet, you're gonna, believe me, you have cachet now. You remember the Red Sox. You can do things like this. They sit right over there.
Right.
They sit right over there, right next to the dugout. If you could meet one actor or actress, who would it be?
I'd love to meet Clint Eastwood.
Ooh. Better hurry.
Ooh, I know. I like Clint Eastwood. Matthew McConaughey.
All right, he was here.
Yeah, right. For that. I like Matthew McConaughey. Leo.
Okay.
Be cool. I love all his, I mean, every movie he makes, I feel like is awesome.
See, this is the perks of the job. I'm giving you the perks of the job. So that I can tell you this. The only answer I can give you for that question, not even a question, but one thing I can tell you, if you win the World Series here as a prominent member, you can meet these people.
That would be so cool. And I'll tell you, I always forget this movie, but one of my favorites is The Departed.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, there you go. That's how you knew about Boston, right?
I love The Departed. Yeah. And Boondock Saints.
Okay, so you, if you want to do the tour, you haven't walked around Boston too
much. Not
much,
no.
Yeah,
I don't live. I live like a mile away. So
there you go. You can do the Departed tour,
right,
if you
that'd
like.
Be cool.
Hey Matt, thanks a lot. I took up a lot of your time. I appreciate it. Your first podcast under the belt. You've done a lot of interviews lately, but I hope this was the most enjoyable one. Not even close.
Oh, for sure, the easiest one.
There you go. Thanks, Ryan.
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses.
It is not hard to destroy a college.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.